And welcome everybody on YouTube to Off the Hook Overtime. Here we are in YouTube land. This is Manuel. Kyle, did you make it?
I made it.
And Rob Gila?
Hello.
Okay. And we're actually broadcasting on YouTube, which is nice. Is that correct, Rob?
Yes.
Okay. Nodding your head doesn't work on the radio. I believe Alex had to leave us for some family issues, which we completely understand. We're going to try and make this a quick one because it's been so stressful the last few weeks, actually. And today was not a picnic, and we kind of have to get to work and try and fix things. So.
We have done a lot for all of you out there, and really want to make an opportunity to hear from you. So I think hearing that feedback would be really cathartic, because we shouldn't just be doing if we're not doing the right things in that regard.
Yeah. Well, let's go out the phone number 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Yeah, I didn't mean for the Hope issue to take up just about all the show, but boy, there's a lot to say and a lot to share. And we all have something to say. And we also want to hear what our listeners, attendees, whatnot, readers have to say as well, because it's a whole big community out there, and we're always working to keep that community as together as possible. It's Rebel, isn't it? Of course it's Rebel. We know it's Rebel. Let's just pick up the damn phone and we'll get it over with. Hey, Rebel, what's up?
Yeah, I'm calling from California.
As promised, yes. You're in California now. Did you rent a car?
Yes, I rented a Chevy Bolt. I'm using my Bluetooth. I'm calling from my regular cell phone using the Bluetooth. And you know, this has a charging pad, which you put your phone, you place your smartphone on the pad, and it's supposed to charge it. So,
yeah, many of us have seen that.
Yeah. Now, what I'm going to do is go on the freeway. Oh, why is it not charged? See, this one, I rented a car. When I was in Arizona last week, I rented a car, and it was good. And the charging pad was, like, right on the console, but in the middle, but a little bit more efficient and better than this one here in this car.
Can I ask, why didn't you just take that rental car to California?
No. I flew from New York City to Arizona. I flew from Arizona to California.
That's the part I'm questioning. Why didn't you just take the rental car from Arizona and drive that to California instead of renting a second car?
I've done that before.
And taking an airplane.
I like taking airplanes, so I...
Have you heard what's happening to airplanes lately? They're like falling apart in the air.
They're losing the doors.
Yeah, you don't want that. That doesn't happen in a car usually.
No, but okay. Now we're gonna start. Now we gotta get back on the freeway.
Get back on the freeway. Why? Wait. Why are we getting on the freeway with you? Right. Can't you just stop and talk to us?
Where are you going?
I am stopping. Well, the thing about Bluetooth is that that has the quality of this Bluetooth.
Well, you literally said you're getting on the freeway, so that's not stopping and talking to us, is it?
He's got his hands on the wheel. I mean,
does he?
It's Bluetooth.
How do you know that?
It's Bluetooth. He just told us.
It doesn't mean he has his hands on the wheel.
All right. I think
my phone is on the charging.
Yeah, pad. That was the thing he was looking for, as to how to charge. I believe you're actually driving.
Are you moving
and
right now? Is your vehicle moving?
I will be moving.
No, I didn't want it to move. I was curious if you were going 60 miles an hour while you're looking for something and talking to us.
If he feels confident.
No, I
trust him.
I don't care if he feels calm. I'm worried about the people in front of him.
I was going to speak to that. I was going to say that, like, he seems like he's doing all the right things as far as
the way they're not.
I don't feel he's endangering anyone.
And it's an electric car, by the way. I'm thinking an electric car Chevy Bolt.
We were going to get to that, but okay. That's good. Good for you, being green.
Where are you going?
Back to where I'm staying. Well, my friend lives near San Diego, so I'm going to visit him.
Well, that sounds lovely.
Anything relevant this week, Rebel?
Well, I'm sorry to hear what happened to Hope. I mean, I hope that the Hope Conference, you know.
Yes. Well, let's hope it's a hiccup or a speed bump or whatever you want to call it, and that we figure out how to get past it. Acknowledging it is the first step, I think.
Right. Let's see. What else was I going to say? Oh, I should have written it down.
Yeah, you should have written it down. I mean, people have been doing that for ages. Write things down. That way you won't
don't
forget.
Say that while he's driving. He just
well,
needs
I didn't
to
mean
drive.
For him
just
to do
drive.
It while he's driving,
oh,
obviously.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I went to the Phoenix 2600 meeting last week.
Well, tell us all about it.
It was very interesting. It was very formal. They had a PowerPoint presentation. They were talking about software-defined radios.
Some meetings do that. Some meetings have presentations. In fact, I heard from Rob T. Firefly that New York City had a presentation. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. One of our attendees was conducting a workshop on chainmail.
Rebel insists on talking the same time you are. Rebel, why don't you listen to Rob for a second?
So
Rob,
what happens
go,
we
go
ask
ahead
for participation.
And say what you're trying to say.
Hi, Rebel. One of our attendees very graciously led a demonstration on making chainmail and brought some supplies for folks to use. And I was looking it over, and it looked very cool.
I still question why that's being done at a hacker meeting, but whatever. You know, it's to each their own.
Knife crimes.
All right, back to you, Rebel.
Okay, so, so it was very interesting. Hacker-defined radio, it was kind of complicated because, I mean, they only had like an hour to talk. So it wasn't like a 2600 meeting that you just, 5 o'clock, you just gather around and then, about 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, you leave when the place kind of closes. This is an actual room in a community center. Mm-hmm. So they actually have people that, talk and about hacker-defined radio, which, what is that? Is that like, they said it's like...
Wait, you attended the lecture. You should tell us what it is.
Yeah, but it's something they had a device hooked up to their laptop with an antenna, and they were able to tune into different frequencies as if the computer and the device was a scanner, a frequency scanner. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a really, well-followed, grown up thing now. It started off with people modifying and building custom equipment, and we had several of the HOPE installations where we had ham radio licensing tests and people bringing gear. We began to see some of this stuff going from just older style radios that were doing one frequency at a time to something that can bring in all of it and allow you to navigate it and see visualizations and use computer software in ways that some of the older hardware-based receivers and transmitters worked. I'm not at all an expert in the field, but it has blown up.
You showed me something, Kyle.
It's called WebSDR, which is people putting these online.
It's amazing. It's like a radio dial, and you can tune it live and listen to different frequencies as if you had a radio in that place. And not only that, multiple people can do the same thing. It's like science fiction, but it works.
Yeah, there's one in Holland that I really like. It's the University of Twente. I believe, and they
TWENTE, I think.
Electrical engineering department they built one a long time ago, and then they repaired it and put a better one in there. That it's basically the size of like a Raspberry Pi or similar form factor.
What was that, Rebel?
No, I was talking to you on the CB. Speaking of radio, so let me.
Wait, hold on a sec. You were talking on a CB radio while you're talking to us.
Yeah, but you were talking.
We were talking to you. Yeah. We were talking to you, for God's sake. And you respond to that by talking to somebody else on a different radio? Wow. I mean, I thought I knew what Gaul was, but this is the pinnacle.
Okay. Well, this is case in point. I mean, this is the society we're living in now.
This is it. This is it right this here. This is exactly everything that you want to ask.
Care?
What's gone wrong with communications? It's right in front of you.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Ask Bard what SDR is. I'm sure Bard will tell you.
Is it like you have scanners, like you have the scanner which contains the different frequencies and frequency bands, like a radio, but you do it with a computer now. Is that the way this works?
Yeah, that's a short answer, sure. But who cares anyway, right?
Right. I remember you're the one who told me that They put the in front of the freeway numbers in California. You know, I'm on the 15 now.
Right. But in Canada, too.
Yeah, in Canada, too. Let's see. All right, let's talk on the radio. Would you like to hear? Okay, let's see. Nobody's on the radio. Let's see.
No, they're all just being quiet because they hear you're in range. So it's called self-preservation.
There's nobody even on the Weather Channel, the weather thing. Why is that? Oh, here. What? You know, radio, it's very complicated because, you know, AM radio, CB is an AM radio band and it's also FM, but it's very... The frequency that CB is on is very finicky. You have to have special antennas, and they have to be grounded properly and tuned a certain way and mounted a certain way, you know?
Yes.
Like ham radio. I guess ham radio is the same way. So ham radio is very complicated. I probably wouldn't pass the ham radio license. Okay.
Rebel, I think we've all had our fill. Careful driving, and give my regards to whoever you talk to on the CB radio, and we will talk to you again in the future.
Nobody was talking. See, had the quality, the blowing into the microphone.
Yeah.
The Bluetooth.
Uh huh.
Yeah. See, the quality is I'm
blown away by the quality.
All right. While you're driving too, because it's an electric car, so there's no like motor noise.
No, that's true. It's very quiet. I'll give you that. No engine noise from Rebel at all. But do enjoy yourself out there in California. We're going to open up the phone lines for somebody else, and that is of course our regular caller Rebel from the roads of California right now. Probably read about that in the paper somewhere. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Rob, Gila, any comments from you? You've been rather quiet.
Well, just wanted to say hello to the 42 people who are currently joined with us on the live stream. We did have our friend Lex tell us, he says, you know, careful, Rebel, that's how you get banned. So I'm just putting that out there. Although I did say to Rob when Rebel called that the fact that he wasn't commenting in the YouTube chat while driving was definitely, you know, a positive choice on his part. So
I don't know if that was a choice. I think that was a limitation. I think he just couldn't do that on top of everything else while driving.
Well, I'm just saying. So, and yes, so, yes, it is indeed 42 is the answer to life, the universe and everything. And now
why,
we've gone down
why
to 40.
Are you saying that now?
Because we had 42 people in the chat.
Oh, that's
and someone
why.
Commented.
Okay.
Our friend of ours commented.
You didn't say that
life,
part.
The universe, and everything. Well, I was about to.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden we had gone down to 40, but now we're back to 42.
It's just, you know, it's when people suddenly respond to somebody who is online as opposed to the person they're talking to on the radio, gets a little confusing. And I think that's sort of part of what we're talking about. People, all different communication channels.
Yes, everything's... And now I'm just watching the number. Now we're at 44.
See how distracted you are? Just by a number.
We have a call on the line.
Oh, we have a call. You see, and a caller has been waiting patiently. Yep. Hey, have they been patient? They have to be patient.
I don't know.
All right, well, we'll find out. Good evening. You're on Off the Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, Emmanuel. It's Delchai.
Hey, Delchai. How are you doing? Hey, your article got printed in this latest issue.
Yes. We had a minor celebration over here.
Oh, wow.
To that effect.
Well, congratulations. It was really good about the bone box, I believe.
Yes, the bone box. And I haven't heard a lot. A couple of people have actually hit me up asking me how to build one. And I'm trying to get my hands on another craft access terminal so I can do a better, you know, step-by-step picture, video. This is how you do it.
Well, we have one, and it's kind of just sitting around. So if you want one, you can have it.
That'd be great.
But you just gave away our craft access terminal?
I don't want it. Do you want it?
Well, it's like a trophy. It's something you hold on to.
It is a trophy.
Yeah.
And you should hang on to it, especially if you have like a toy museum, kind of like I have.
Well, I mean, if you're building it for someone and they're going to buy it, then yeah, maybe it shouldn't be just, oh, but if no, you're going to no, use no, it as an instruction piece or some, you needed another one to share, the project, but I don't know. I'm just saying we have one. It's not doing anything. Nobody seems to, the only time anyone ever does anything with it is when we're like showing off old phones and stuff, someone who may have worked in the industry, they'll like pick it up and say, "Hey, I know what this is."
It's not like it can do anything right now, can it? I mean, would it even work?
Can't.
Yeah. No, it's a
the switches
a curiosity.
That work with have been long since decommissioned.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's why. I mean,
and
it wouldn't be.
It doesn't operate on its own as a butt set. Like you would think it would, but it doesn't because of the way it's rigged up.
Yeah. We have butt sets too.
Yeah,
well, we've got a lot of things.
I've got plenty of those. I actually made one. I don't know if you've seen it. I made a Hello Kitty butt set.
Well, someone had to.
Well, it was a gift. And, you know, it's one of those things when somebody you know is a big Hello Kitty fan and they have everything Hello Kitty and you're like, oh, no, you don't. Watch this. Hold my beer. And now they have a Hello Kitty lineman set.
Wow.
Meow.
Anything else? Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead.
That is fantastic. Yeah. And I know we're an audio medium, but that doesn't mean you can't send us a picture of the Hello Kitty butt set at oth@2600.com.
Oh, yeah. It was on Gizmodo and a bunch of other places. You just Google it. You'll see it.
Fantastic.
Keep up the great work. Those sound like awesome found object, I guess, modifications?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what I've been doing a lot of lately. I just did an article for the Adafruit site about building a patch bay out of old Keystone parts.
Oh yeah, okay. So like the kind of thing that would be for like a network or telecommunications rack.
Well, it's kind of that, but I expanded on it because people were complaining about having to always pull out the TV and pull out the racks in order to plug things in.
Uh-huh.
And like you have a retro gaming console or something. Now you just have this panel that you just plug into literally in the front of the rack. And it just says, you know, okay, take this signal, put it into here. That's HDMI 1 on this TV and you're done. You don't have to rewire anything. You don't have to pull anything apart and you can switch things around. It's a very like, analog poor man's solution because a lot of newer equipment has switches built into it. But when you're dealing with older equipment, you know, that doesn't have that built in or isn't made for it, you can still get RCA Keystone plugs. So it's like being able to add things to your stereo or to, you know, somebody comes over with a console or you're having a LAN party or something. You can just plug into this rack instead of having to go digging around and throwing wires everywhere.
Wow.
That's great. Keeps it organized, keeps it simple. You can get right to what you're doing instead of figuring out how you're going to make it all work and even get to that point.
Also, it's great if you have an audio mixer because you don't have to keep pulling the audio mixer out and undoing the rack screws and pulling everything out to plug new things in.
Very cool. Hey, Deltry, when's the next article you're going to write for us?
Well, you know, I could get. I'm trying to come up with something that's, you know, good enough. But I mean, I've got something I'm writing on home automation right now.
Okay.
I'm doing this project here at home, cloudless home automation. No Google, no Siri, no nothing. Just cutting them all out of the loop.
Oh, I'm interested in that.
But still having fully functional home automation.
I think a lot of people will be interested in that, for sure.
It's all based around a project called Home Assistant, which is the only system I've found that supports doing this without the cloud. Now, they have options to be in the cloud, but you have to specifically, purposefully turn them on. But right now, I've got a series of Raspberry Pis with like 7-inch touchscreens all over my apartment. And I got an LCARS interface for it, which looks so badass. It's so beautiful. And I can do things like control lights, control audio. I've got this thing called ambient audio, an ambient audio system, where I have a separate set of speakers and a separate amp that just plays like low-key background sound. So like a thunderstorm or a, you know, windstorm or water flowing over a bridge. And then I got the brilliant idea. I went out and I got a sample of the engineering sound from the original Star Trek. Like when you go out into the engineering department and you hear that little wah, 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 wah. Mm-hmm. So now yes. My entire apartment sounds like you're in the engineering deck of the Enterprise.
Wow. Yeah, that's what we all know that sound.
And I've also got it rigged up where you can like hit a button and play samples to a specific place. And I use another Raspberry Pi for that to act as an audio server. So like if I can see my cat doing something she's not supposed to be doing, I can hit a button and over on my bed the speaker will play, "Hey, stop that."
Now has the cat learned how to press the button and talk to you?
Not yet. Though that does exist. But those are buttons that you put on the floor, and it takes a lot of training to get them to use it correctly. It's actually easier with dogs.
Uh-huh.
I've seen it done with dogs. So, yeah, that might be the next thing I write for you. Yeah,
that sounds great. And please go into detail, because this is the kind of thing that deserves to be really spelled out in great detail, I think.
Yeah, I remember earlier in the dawn of PCs and home computers, this was something people were really interested in, making the early operating systems work with things around the home. And this is still of interest to everybody. Everybody has a space, and integrating these things themselves to suit their need is a skill. It takes design and stuff like that. And it's still desirable, and there's so much to update it with. So there's a lot there that you could get into.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something you might find interesting. Do you know when one of the very first articles written about home automation was written?
Okay.
It was in a magazine.
In a magazine. I'm going to say sometime in the 1930s.
That I haven't seen. I'm talking about fully working home automation.
Okay. 1940s. I'm sorry. I'm betting on early rather than late.
1979.
Okay. It would have gotten there eventually.
Popular Science did an article about a guy who had built a home automation system he called Breslin. And all of the fun he had had with that, because it worked right, but then it would freak out on him.
Uh-huh.
One time he was like painting the house and the garage door would open. But it was all very basic stuff. It almost predated X10.
Wow.
I mean, X10 was the original progenitor of home automation, even though it wasn't really automation, but it was a centralized place where you could push buttons and make things happen. And it wasn't wireless, first of all, until later on. Later on, they made a wireless remote that looked like an old walkie-talkie that had like the 4-foot-long extendable antenna on it. But it worked over the electrical wiring in your house. And you had a command center, and it would piggyback a signal onto the regular wall voltage. And it would go through, and the receiver would receive it, and your light would come on. Or your blender would turn on.
And people used it. So quaint and cumbersome.
At the same
time. Yeah, it was absolutely cumbersome. And it didn't always work, because you couldn't always be assured that there was a circuit pass from where you were from your source to your destination device.
Like somebody turns off a switch somewhere and it closes it. And,
yep,
and interference alone.
Because it was on the internal house wire, it didn't have much interference.
Oh, okay.
The wireless stuff, yeah, it had interference. So it had interference like mad. But this is way before anybody had even thought of IoT. IoT comes with its own nightmares. So many things. If you're ever curious about IoT devices and people who are using them, just use Shodan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because so many IoT devices, people don't realize what they get. They're like, oh, I have this nifty device and I can turn my lights on and do this and do that. And it punches a hole in the inherent firewall in your home system and allows people from the outside to control your house, especially if you don't change the default passwords. Same thing goes with a lot of these white box security camera systems. You can go in there and put in a port number and see cameras all over the world. And people just have never changed the default passwords, or they didn't know that you could, that when you set the thing up, it punches a hole in your firewall.
You know, Dalchai, nobody's written a really good article on Shodan for the magazine either. You know, they've mentioned it, they've alluded to it, but I'd like to see a comprehensive guide or just something with specific examples, because, boy, there is a whole world in there.
There is. And you can easily, very easily get lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early days of external hard drives, USB external hard drives, they had the same problem where, you know, they said, yeah, you can share pictures with grandma in, you know, Ohio. Just plug this thing in. And again, it would either use UPnP or it would use some other form of bypassing NAT to hey, here you go. Here's your IP address. Go to this port and you're in. And people were having their music collections raided and all their photos raided. You know, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Some people went out there and they just saw it and used it as a proof of concept to teach people, you know, hey, be careful of this. And the bad were the people who would go out there and, you know, oh, nice music collection, squirt, now it's mine. And the ugly, when people would go out there and go, watch me delete everything this guy has. And, you know, you go out there, oh, look, here's your tax records for the last 10 years. Boom, gone.
Yeah, but right access doesn't make any sense. Sharing sounds like a good thing, and I don't really see a problem with that.
But once again, if you don't know it's doing it, and you just leave the defaults there,
right.
A lot of times the defaults will let you have read-write access.
That's true. That's very true.
Or you'll have an admin account with no password.
Yeah, this is why I think basic home networking needs like instructions around the need to separate and segment different parts of your network, use different domain and overall like IP structure so that things are not necessarily on the same subnets and they're not connected in the ways that they are when everything's default, as you're saying. And that is also an area that people don't talk about enough. Like, what's your hacker network like?
Right.
How do you set up your enterprise?
you realize that we live in a world where, you know, people shoot 12 packs of beer because they're politically angry. These aren't rocket scientists. They wouldn't know an IP subnet.
That's not news to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the thing is, I mean, you're not wrong. You're completely 110% right. But expecting the average person to be able to do that kind of network engineering at home.
And not only that, though, I mean, I would say even at hacker conferences and stuff like that, there's this this tendency to guard, and people want to guard what they know because it gives them status and won't share and people end up not knowing how to do basic stuff.
Well, that's
stuff.
Just true in the world in general.
It's like a lot of things.
That's been a problem since the days when I owned a TRS-80.
Exactly. So here we are
the only thing you can do about that is directly fight it yourself.
Right. And then,
to not be that gatekeeper, not be that person. That's the only thing you can do, and it's still going to be out there.
Yeah, and beating a dead horse about other people and how bad their networks are set up or how they're not going to listen. I mean, we've been doing that for a very, very long time.
I'm just going to say they don't have to. They're not even aware. They're not even aware of what they're doing half the time. This is not a matter of
beating
the dead horse of people are computer illiterate. This is like there are literally people out there who will go out and buy a gizmo that they see on TV without even thinking, without even putting any thought whatsoever into what it does to their network. And you say, well, I don't need a home network. I just plug into that box the cable company gave me and it's all done.
Right.
Okay, and that's why there's something out there you might want to check out called NBTV.
What's that?
Naomi Brockwell is a privacy advocate who does this amazing set of videos on how to protect your privacy, how to configure things, how to de-Google your phone. And they're done with a really lighthearted but intelligent manner so that people can follow it.
Okay. Sounds good.
And it's made for the average user who may have just stumbled upon the word cyber by accident. And there's an entire channel on YouTube, but there's also, she does talks and lectures and how-tos. And they're all very down to earth, and some of them are kind of funny, but they're all relatable. And it's a great outreach to people who need to be reached out to, and you need to be told, hey, listen, before you do that, I had like a knockdown drag out verbal with a friend of mine who thought I was being a paranoid schizophrenic. Because I didn't want to use Zelle. It's a money exchanging system similar to PayPal. And I said, look, I don't want my phone sucked dry for data. I don't want my phone book in my phone resold for profit. And he's like, no, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. You're just nuts. And I sat him down and I took him to the webpage. And I showed him their privacy policy, and I showed them the chart that said exactly what they do. We will sell this data to third-party channel partners. And they install anti-malware software on your phone. They do all kinds of things to all the data you give them. And it's all wrapped up, for your security and your privacy. But then you see, we have channel partners who we sell this information to.
Yep.
And, that's the sort of thing people will actually actively fight against you and tell you you're just being a paranoid until you put the proof down in front of them.
We're so used to that. And we're so incredibly used to that because it's like this gap in knowledge. And it is critical that people are presented in an approachable way so they understand that this is actually a very like fundamental part of the way consumer electronics and the internet has evolved, and that they're inviting a lot more, and without realizing it, they're actually much more vulnerable. So it's great to share that, and that's exactly our mission here on the radio and in a lot of the things that we try to spread, is like, how can we simplify this? We need more articles about stuff like that, like Shodan and as you said, and some of the other stuff, just so people have an idea of how powerful some of these things are when they're not used as intended.
Yeah, I mean, we bought a gizmo, and I plugged a gizmo in, and I'm not sure if that gizmo is treating our network properly.
I haven't checked on the gizmo.
Yeah, I don't even know where the gizmo is. Gila, go ahead.
We have gotten a request.
Hang on, Deltrite. Gila, go ahead.
Deltrite, we have gotten a request from a listener saying they would love to see this IoT stuff. There's like a talk or a workshop at HopeXV. So if you're considering submitting.
Wow, that didn't even come from
that
us.
That would be fantastic.
That came from somebody else. So
that came from a listener in the chat.
It's
so
unlikely I'll be able to make Hope, but I will. I'll try. I can't get around much anymore. I have a really gnarly spine injury that's left me unable to walk. Mm-hmm. And I can't travel that well. I'm on the other coast now.
Well, Deltrite,
I will definitely look into that.
Yeah, because one thing that came out of the pandemic was the virtual part of Hope, and we still have that.
Yeah.
We still have some virtual talks, and we might even have a virtual track, so we'll figure out how to do that. But we definitely want to include you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My very first talk at a large con was at Hope many, many, many years ago. I was just going to bring up the Spider Box.
Okay.
Remember the Spider Box?
Yes, and that's online. That's on this very channel, Channel 2600. If you go to whichever
that's
Hope
when I
that
first
was.
Talked about grabbing HID card information. Uh-huh. And I had built a HID card reader that I put in a flower pot and read people's badges as they walked past it and going into a building in New York.
Wow. Was that going all the way back to like H2K2 or something?
I think it was H2K2.
So that's 2002.
I think it was 2002, yeah, because I think it was the same year that did you have Jell-O as a keynote speaker that year?
Yeah, well, Jell-O was a keynote for a few years, but I think that was one of them.
There was one year when he was a keynote speaker, and somebody was supposed to go pick him up at the airport or whatever, and they flaked. And you asked me to take care of it. And I went out there.
No, I asked you to take care of the person who flaked. That's what I asked you to do, take care of them.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I got a New York City rental limo, and I went out to pick him up, and it totally blew his mind. Because I showed up at the airport with a cardboard sign made out of a pizza box that said, "Jell-O, Emmanuel sent me to get you, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt." And he thought that was funny, and then he didn't even take me seriously when we got outside, and there's this like, limo sitting there. And I'm like, "Come on." And he's like, yeah, good joke. And I'm like, "No, get."
Yeah, Jell-O Biafra learned a lot about the hacker community through Hope, and I'm proud of that. And he became a fan of the Hope conferences. That's why he kept coming back.
It was great to meet him too, and like, you know, just have the chance to talk with him, because there's so much that he knows about and things that he's experienced that are parallel in the music world that have parallels in the hacker world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bringing them together, and then the ability to see what's happened in the past and how it's reoccurring to the hacker community is really a powerful thing.
The mm-hmm. cyclical nature of things, totally.
Yep. Well, that's like part of the magic of it.
When you were talking about Google suppressing your emails.
Right.
And, you know, you didn't know if it was people were getting bored, people were getting tired, or if something bad was happening. It reminds me of this photo I have hanging here next to my stereo at home of Abbie Hoffman at WBAI doing his radio show.
Wow.
And the first thing that came to my mind was, yeah, but that's a sign where you don't, that says don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't, even if people aren't as interested in it anymore, you don't have to have the world's biggest con.
No.
You can have 10 people sitting under a tree.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, we don't have to have the biggest convention, absolutely, but we do have to cover our costs and, you know, do something that people will want to come back to. Gila, you had something to say?
Yes, Delshi, I just wanted to let you know that we have a commenter in the chat who wanted to make sure you know. They said they remember your talk at one of the Hope conferences that they made it to, and you were great. So just wanted to pass that along to you.
See how a Hope conference can last forever. Somebody in this chat saw your talk 20 years ago, 22 years ago.
Yes. What's happening now is just maybe either growing pains or societal pains. But the thing is, the base service that 2600 provides to the known world is always going to be necessary.
Yeah,
now, will
like
it always
so.
Be popular? Will it always be famous? Who knows? But it's always going to be necessary.
Yeah.
Because as any technology evolves, there are going to be people on the cutting edge of it. They're going to be people kind of in the middle of the road. They're going to get the people who are left behind. And everybody needs a place to go in a rational and, you know, reasonably friendly manner to say, hey, what the hell is this computer thing?
Yeah.
You know, what is this thing I'm sticking in the wall? And we just don't have that outside of what you've been doing.
Yeah. And especially in unusual ways and ways that things weren't intended. There are a lot more, and I think this is something we can be happy about. There are more off ramps in the actual curriculums and science. The emphasis that we've seen on building things and using applied knowledge in academia, in early education, that stuff that we think is vastly more supported. There's more kits. There's more stuff with advanced circuits like microcontrollers. A lot of those things are finding their ways into science and other educational and academic environments. So the sense of knowledge being elusive in some ways has changed. And what I was getting at is there are more off ramps early on before people, for people to pursue very specific things. And that is fantastic. That's great. We want to be a part of that and support it in as many ways as we have going forward. And maybe there's new things that we can advocate and work on, on the other side. I don't know when people are being de-educated, but the good part about, I think, just appreciating that is that there has been wider acceptance. When you say hacking, I think people know more about what's going on than they did when Hope just started. And so I want to account for that a little bit, or adjust for that a little bit in how we're feeling about things, and just be on the lookout for new opportunities for us to be effective in advancing that spirit.
Yeah, because someone has to do it, because it's not being done.
Well said. Thank
you. Back when I was first getting started, okay, back in the day when I got my hands on my first computer, okay, if you even said the word computer inside of a school, they would roll their eyes and say, oh yeah, the $1 billion thing they have in the hole in Washington, D.C., or the kid next to you would be like, shut up, we're going to play Star Wars and knock you down. Or, you know, they would point and laugh. Or, you know, you got that one kid in the school, and when the teacher blew up the computer, they went and grabbed that kid out of whatever class. You know, those days are gone. They have kids now who are like 5, 6, 7 years old who are building things with microcontrollers. And, you know, the stuff they have available to them now, I mean, anybody remember having to save money for weeks to get a box of 10 floppy disks because they were like $50?
I don't remember floppy disk costs, but yeah, they were expensive. I know that.
And you bought them out of the back of a magazine. You remember when Computer Shopper used to be the size of the phone book?
Boy, that was something. Yes, it was huge.
And you would spend hours going through it trying to find the right prices. Now you can go down to Walmart and get more RAM that fits in a micro SD card inside of your phone than most of us had before we were 30.
Except you don't have to go there. You just do it online and it shows up in your house.
Yeah, that too. There's good and bad, and there's good and bad in all of this. You know what I'd like to see, though, is I'd like to see this information and this unity go back to where it was in the mid-80s, where it was, let's bring people together, instead of where it is now, where it's just, let's bring people together and make them hate each other.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to go back, and I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember a poster I made called This Is Not the Future I Signed Up For?
I know the phrase. I don't remember the poster.
I made a poster. It was a rant that I wrote many, 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 many years ago. It was back in 2000 because I saw some of the things that were happening. And it's like, this is not what it was supposed to be. You know, I remember the days of jumping on IRC and talking to my friend in Finland or a guy in Ireland or asking somebody in Costa Rica, you know, hey, what's this, you know, DOS 2.0 thing, you know? And now, even though it's faster and easier, we're doing things like saying, well, you know, you're an idiot because you eat this cereal and you don't drink this soda. And I hate you because you didn't tip me. And here's a fake video. And it's like, people, stop. You know, this is meant to be a tool for unity, not separation and isolation.
Well, tools always get misused at one point or another.
It is true.
I think, you know, we have to think back about the days you're talking about, but also just that way of thinking. I think it was fresh then because the technology was fresh. So we were thinking, hey, this is an opportunity to do something different. We'll have that same opportunity again in a different way. We just need to recognize it when it comes back and not go down the same path yet again of ignorance and suspicion and hatred that we seem to always fall into.
We're almost at the point now where I suggest going backwards into the future.
Okay.
And using the existing internet to bring back BBSs.
Well, a lot of people want to bring back BBSs, I'll tell you that, because they were so magical. But if you're going to bring back BBSs, you have to limit the speed to 1,200 and only one caller per line.
Well, we might want to do better than that. But the thing is, forward into the past, which is actually funny. It's a slogan of the SCA. But it makes good sense because everything that's out there right now is just meant to suck up all your data, get all of your info, take your money, brainwash you into thinking Coke is better than Pepsi, whatever. And instead of, I don't know how to put a resistor with this capacitor, or, how much baking soda do I put into a pizza crust? That stuff is still out there. But there's so much militant stuff. It's been misused to the point where we need to start over again. And we need to go, hi, my handle is X. And, my handle is Y. And it's like, hey, let's trade some stuff. Or, I just wrote this really cool Python program. And, just get back to the roots so that we can stop hating each other and, maybe come together and, make things better than worse.
I really, I've been thinking, and just as you're talking about scale, and I think that so much has been about let's build and grow and make this network bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And these companies rose and rode that wave. They were right there to get in on the rush and get bigger and bigger and bigger and more dominant. And now they're just continuing to do like M&A and consolidation and seeing their extent become whatever as big and as indelible as possible. And the funny part is a lot of the computing and a lot of the storage is getting, and even now algorithmic stuff, or I guess machine learning, these things can exist outside of a cloud. So I'm thinking of doing more of the things that are more decentralized. That's had been kind of loaded in the past, but it's worked always in the past. It's been disruptive. It's shut down industries. And maybe that I'm hoping the same thing. And I see it in things like the federated social media, running machines and on a smaller scale, more locally. There's also, fog computing instead of cloud computing. This is industry jargon on the enterprise level, but you can look at that and say like, well, if industry's able to do less with these centralized models and they're that big and they're saying that, well, maybe like the answer is just like improving the mesh network in our backyard and like automating our house a little better, or helping your neighbor automate theirs. So they have more ability, whatever it is. Like, there is an answer to this, and it certainly isn't just like finding disillusion in it. We should share, even if it's hard, and get past all of it.
It's going to be hard because we've got a lot of things to undo. There are a lot of things that need to be undone and fixed. There's been a lot of gatekeeping. There's been a lot of, are you this or are you that? Or are you a member of this or are you doing that? Do you know this person? Do you know that person? And, these people didn't even know themselves.
Yeah,
when they were doing this.
We could easily get into really try to avoid that because that itself feeds more personal drama and stuff like that. And, like, it's just, that can become a self-fulfilling like fountain of drama, as I believe Johannes has referred to American society before. And it's true what you're noticing, but dwelling on it, we don't want to fuel more of it.
It's not about dwelling on it. It's learning from it and not replicating it.
Well, I agree with you. But that's what I mean when I say like trade show. I think there's like definitely circuits. There is a circuit of speaking and engaging in some of this stuff, and people that just live for moving from one thing to the next, whether it's a campaign or something that is tearing things down. And we want to be with those building it up.
Yeah. And a lot of times that means building something new.
Yeah, it can. It can also mean making something old better. And,
remember that great quote, how do you feel about Western civilization? Well, it would be a great idea.
Yeah, let's try something new. Hey, Deltra, it's been great talking to you again. We're going to open up the phone lines to somebody else. But please keep on writing and let us know what you're up to. Sounds fascinating.
Yes, I will do. Keep All publishing.
Right. All right. Be well.
And you as well.
Our good friend, Deltra. And catch his article in the current 2600, the winter issue. By the way, the winter issue is now out. We've caught up finally. Since COVID, issues have been delayed by as much as 3 months, and we've been gradually making up that time. And with the winter issue, it's finally at the stage where we can print the season on the cover again. Because if you print the season and your magazine is on a store shelf and that season is no longer there, then they take it off the store shelf. So you can't have the winter issue out in the spring. Even if it's a couple of weeks, they tend to throw them out, and that's not good for us. So we had to wait. We shaved about a week or so off every issue since, I believe, summer 2020. But we finally made it. We finally made it.
Yeah, and that has led to a compressed schedule, and it was really a tall order for everyone behind the scenes. So we're really thankful for all the efforts to meet that challenge and adjust. I mean, this was basically dealing with the realities of retail, and that's something we don't really get to talk about. It's not a part of what we share about, but operationally, like, those things, they are they're a big deal, and we work very hard to stay on top of it and make sure that we aren't falling into pitfalls and getting tangled up. And we publish from like the best position we can as a publisher.
Yeah. You say the realities of retail, and those realities never are good realities. And, you know, 2600 does quite well actually in the retail market. We have a great reputation, with distributors, our online store is one of the highest rated ones. With all that, it still is a constant challenge just to stay alive. I can imagine what it's like for people that or organizations that are much more on a shoestring. So yeah, it's not something to take lightly. It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. But we're determined to keep plugging away and keep trying. And we have one more phone call.
You want to take that now?
Why don't we take that now? Are they on? Okay. And good evening. You're on Off the Cover Time. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I'm going to try and make this as brief as I can.
Sure.
Side Pocket. I'm calling from the lovely hackerspace known as Hack Manhattan. Here's my possibility, because I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine that is kind of absurd, but it also might have some like real ramifications, so I thought you'd maybe play along with me here. That conversation basically broke down to all the power play moves that Apple has been doing recently with such as locking certain storefronts out and battling for their lightning cables and such, and what they proposed, because they were a giant business Apple fan, that somehow in the near future, wouldn't it be out of the realm of possibility to them that Apple would, and I quote, create its own internet, meaning it has its own direct protocols and everything would route through Apple rather than the general internet at large. So my postulate is, how dumb is this idea if it is, and if they actually did this, what would be all the ramifications you could think of that would come from this?
Well, that's a fascinating idea, and you know, to answer it, I would say just look at people who buy into Apple in general. Look how you know, if someone has an iPhone, ask them how many times they've bought an iPhone. Usually, it's about at least five. They constantly, and it's not, you know, to put them down, it's a fact that you'll find it in any large company with a following. They will keep buying the latest revision and upgrading when told it's time to upgrade. So I could see this working for them. It's not a good development, I don't think, because it certainly doesn't go towards any kind of connection of people. It goes towards basically isolating Apple users from everybody else. But I can see Apple users maybe embracing that if it means what they consider to be a better experience.
I think they need a bunch of gateways to get outside of their own sphere, if that's even desirable. I don't know. You should ask someone you love that has an Apple product if they would enjoy having access outside their Apple sphere.
Because some of my quick arguments and their counter arguments was that I feel that, you know, they were trying to use the example of like the Xbox Live Store as an ecosystem. But the thing is that most of our modern ecosystems still run through all the base components of the internet. So to me, it would be kind of redundant
reaction,
they already have a chunk here.
Yeah, my reaction sounds a little bit like what BlackBerry was doing with their own data, like running a different set of services on top of for their encrypted and other push email services and stuff. But this idea sounds totally different. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if it is good or bad. I mean, it probably is bad for everyone else, because as far as protocols and standardization and interoperability, because they're pulling a huge amount of users off of networks that would ordinarily interact with that traffic and be able to manage it. And so to that end, I think it would just, it would be similar to the kind of, you would have issues similar to the things we talk about when we're talking about like Gmail users not being reachable and so forth.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. Well, the big thing I can compare this to is the old days of like Prodigy and CompuServe and America Online and Genie and things like that, where you had this walled garden siloed service, and you know, those sort of things kind of fell by the wayside because people realized as the internet boom of the 90s happened, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could just all talk to each other? And even the advertisers who were putting up the money for the whole thing were like, wouldn't it be great if we could show our crap to everybody instead of just this little exclusive club of paying customers on this one thing? And if Apple wants to reinvent America Online, I think that's going to be a long road for them.
I would like to quickly add that one problem that I could see, because this could go on forever, and I don't mean it to, but is that one of the arguments that used to drive me crazy back in the day was people claiming that Macintosh computers had no viruses compared to Windows or even Linux. And my argument was simply because Macs weren't popular, and that if Apple came up with a product that was popular, they would be hammered, if not even more than their competitors. And then they made the iPhone, and we've seen how much Apple continues to struggle with that. I can imagine that, like other examples in the past, if Apple decided to create their own internet and brag about how secure and private it is, every person out there who is a maniac like myself would go challenge accepted, and there would be very interesting results. My second thing about that real quick is also what would we imagine, because like the United States likes a lot of deregulation, unfortunately, but places like potentially the EU and other places, like I'm really bad with laws, I don't know any existing laws, but I can imagine that a lot of countries and organizations would be basically giving birth to a cow, freaking out about this and being angry with possible, even, I don't even know if there's any legal retaliation, but I imagine that would attempt to happen. So that's another thing I could see happening.
Yeah, sounds plausible. I wish Alex were here to address that point, but something to think about, and thanks for sharing it.
Yep, thank you. Happy New Year. Hack the planet.
Yes, all that stuff. Thanks.
Thanks for listening.
And that's going to do it for us. Full hour has gone by, and we're tired and cranky. but if you want to write to us, please do so, oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you do plan on going to Hope, please register. It would definitely help us plan for the conference ahead, the hope.net. You'll see all the links there. And spread the word, too, because apparently we can't do it efficiently. We haven't figured out exactly how to get through all the dead ends and speed bumps that have been put on our way.
And we booked such a huge tree.
Yeah, thank you. Any final words?
Just that I'm looking, a small DuckDuckGo search led to an article on Macworld about the complete list of Mac viruses, malware, and Trojans, and it's pretty extensive, actually.
Okay, Gayla, go ahead.
Whitelist as many Hope and 2600 related email addresses as you possibly can if you're a Gmail user, and talk to your friends, talk to your enemies, talk to people you know about signing up, getting tickets, going to Hope, submitting for talks and stuff. Talk to people. This is what I'm saying. Talk to people.
I think it's time to bring back stealthily leaving leaflets and stickers and things places to get info out there.
Oh, we need a street team?
I don't want to be annoying. Okay, I'm too late for that, but okay, fine. I don't want to, you know, be annoying in new ways. How about that? Spreading the word is good. And, you know, if you're on our mailing list and you want to get off our mailing list, let us know and we'll take you off the mailing list if the automated commands don't work. That's just in case we are annoying anybody, but I don't think we are. It's annoying to me when I see the hard work of volunteers be labeled in a certain way by a computer that's not even human and won't even answer questions as to why. It's and I've just triggered the personal assistant in the other room whose name is computer, in fact. So this is a good time to sign off. Any final word, Kyle?
Well, just certainly we want to hear what people have to say. Please write OTH at 2600.com. And it's that entity, that company, no doubt has a few hackers that have helped build it. And we would like at least the credit enough to talk about hacker stuff and gather hackers as a thank you. So those companies, in my view, owe us dearly.
And those of you, by the way, who might have tuned in not having any idea what HOPE is all about, stay on this channel, Channel 2600, and look in the sections for all the previous conferences. Every video recorded can be found on this channel. And if you click on a video of your choice, whether it's 1994 or 2022 or all the years in between, you'll get a taste of what HOPE was all about. And if that's something that you want to preserve, consider coming to the next one, hope.net. All right. We will see you again next week. Good night.